The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hi, everyone. It's the Shegula La Salami Show. It's a podcast show set in a virtue cafe. If this is your first time listening to the show, I'm Shegula La Salami. I'm an author. I write children's books. I am a blogger just because I need an avenue to write all the crazy things that go on in my head. And what else do I do? I'm based in the UK. I'm a mother of one. I'm a drinker of hot chocolate. And I host and produce my podcast, The Shegula La Salami Show. It's a podcast show set in a virtue cafe. It's about books and publishing, but probably not the way you imagine. So I have authors and non-authors come on the show. The authors in the show, who, you know, I would say 8 out of 10 times the guests on the show are authors. So the authors on the show, they talk about the process behind publishing their book or writing the book, or, you know, just sharing how the book, you know, would be beneficial to people who want to read the book, or they share their expertise in one way or the other. And those who are non-authors, they talk about their personal expertise in whatever field it is that they do, and they recommend, you know, a book for further reading. So that's kind of like what you would expect from the show today. And like I said, it is set in a virtue cafe. So think about it, you know, you're in your regular, you know, let's say you go to Starbucks and, you know, you meet someone there and you then start having a conversation about books whilst drinking your, you know, your whatever drink you would have in Starbucks. So that's kind of like what the show is like. So it's not so sunny today in London, and I always seem to talk about the weather in London because I love the sun, right? And I don't get enough of it in London. So that's why I always seem to be gloomy and chatting about the sun. But yesterday, the sun has disappeared, and I'm really sad about that. Anywho's, who have I got in the cafe with me today? Hopefully someone really excited. We can have a laugh.
Yeah. Hello. You have with you today Baby Mountain Flower Bear, which is my my pen name. And I wrote a what I think is a very emotionally driven book recently that I really hope can people can relate to. I wrote a very intense 96-page book. I wrote it in 5 days. It was a book that was living in my head for my entire life. I'm almost 50 years old now, and I couldn't keep on living that book. I was living in it every single day. The book is titled Jew Boy, and it's how I overcame drugs, porn. I'm going off the top of my head here. Drugs, porn, suicide, abuse, a bunch of other things. And I wound up retiring from the U.S. Navy. That's pretty much the cover of the book.
Yeah.
I'm good friends with my publisher. I want to preface this with, I didn't choose the wording on the front of the book. I don't feel that I actually overcame anything. I don't think any of us ever actually overcome anything. We learn how to survive with what we've experienced, and that's what I really want to get across with the book, is that I feel that we are all survivors in our own way, and none of us are actually alone.
Yeah. So your pen name sounds—it brings a smile to my face. How did you choose it?
So, Baby Mountain Flower Bear. I never met my biological father. And I know you write children's books, and this is an incredibly adult level book. I never met my father. My mother's first husband, he had a very open relationship. You have to remember, I was born in the, or keep in mind rather, that I was born in the United States hippie time frame. The end of the Vietnam War, it was free love. My mother was 14 when she met the man that she married. He was in his mid-20s. He was her piano teacher. He was a Harvard student, and he was the ultimate hippie man. And took my teenage mother away to a hippie commune where she had slept with a few of his friends, and that's where I resulted from.
Wow.
But their hippie names were Mountain Bear and Flower Bear. And so when I was writing this book, I chose to combine those two names as my pen name, because that's really the only existence that I have from the starting point.
That's quite interesting. Okay, so, you know, we were talking about it before we started the show, that how, you know, in a few of the previous episodes, no one orders anything in a virtual cafe. So I'm trying to make sure that I'm not rude, because this is how, you know, we start having this most amazing conversation, right? And we forget, you know, our drinks, and I feel like I'm then being rude because I don't offer you anything. So what would you like to drink virtually?
I would really enjoy a virtual tall black coffee with just a couple ice cubes in it, please.
Perfect. And do you like any pastries, cookie, munchies? What would you like to go with that?
You know, just some toast.
Perfect.
Toast is good.
My daughter likes toast as well. When I was pregnant with her, and I think it's probably because of this, she's, you know, she likes toast. Like, for some reason, at 2 a.m., I don't know what it was or why it happened, but for some reason at 2 a.m. I had to have scrambled egg and toast and hot chocolate for the last
time. That sounds delicious.
Sorry?
Yeah, I would have the same. Actually, I'll order the same right now at this virtual cafe. That sounds amazing.
I know, right? Scrambled egg is like the bee's knees. It's like the best thing in sliced bread, right? Like, and having scrambled egg with, you know, butter, not margarine, having it with butter on toast with hot chocolate. Like, words cannot explain it.
No, that sounds like certainly like comfort food, which is something I'm a big fan of.
Yes, right. And seriously, whilst I was pregnant the last month before my daughter was born, that was every night at 2 a.m. I don't know why 2 a.m., but I just had to have that. And so now her favorite food as well is hot chocolate, scrambled egg, and toasty.
Perfect.
But yes, so I will get you your virtual comfort food. So yes, please do continue. Tell me about your book. It took you 5 days to write it, did you say? That's amazing.
I did. I wrote it in a 3-day weekend and in a 2-day weekend. And like I said, I had been living the story. We all live our own personal stories, and mine had been already been in book format, just always in my head and never on paper. And I had attempted to write this book when I was much younger, because it's been something that I've been suffering through for quite some time, obviously. But anyway, I tried writing this book when I was much younger, and I couldn't put it together only because there wasn't enough substance toward the end. Now that I'm much older, I was able to formulate some real lessons that I think people can walk away from. Particularly is, you know, letting go of any kind of self ridicule and putting yourself down for issues that you didn't really create on your own, and how to forgive those that may have caused those problems, or even forgiving yourself for letting yourself become a victim for so many years.
Yeah.
I think it's important to be able to not only just move on, but I think it's also important to be able to let go in a way that you're actually discussing your issues that other people can relate to.
Yeah.
So when I talk about suicide, people, I can't say everyone's all, you know, everyone's been depressed at some point, but quite a few people have been depressed at some point in their lives. I just happen to be depressed most of the time, even though I'm very happy and I have a great life. I still wrestle with daily depression. It might have been the way I was raised. It may have been the experiences that I've had. It may be a combination of a whole lot of things, but the important thing is that I keep moving forward. And I really hope that's what people walk away with when they read the book, is that no one will ever have all the answers to the problems. It's how we put, our life forward one day at a time to be able to get to where we want to be. And all I ever want to be is just happy.
Yeah. So just to digress a little bit, can you just talk us through about sort of maybe in like a couple of sentences or in 1 minute, so you know, really short snippet, you know, just sort of talk about what depression is, because I find that a lot of people still don't understand depression. Like sometimes some people might say, oh, but you're just sad, but then we're all sad, you know. And then sometimes you read, well, you know, depression is like when you've been sad for a really, really long time. Like, how did you know that you were depressed? Like, did you get diagnosed with depression? Like, just let us know a little bit more about depression so that if anything, at least someone has taken that away from listening to you.
Yeah, so I would say I was depressed my whole life. I wasn't diagnosed until just a few years ago. I was abused as a young child. I was neglected as a young child. And I was the oldest of four and the only one that wasn't from my my stepfather. He raised the other three. And I was very much kept on the outside, especially when I found out that he wasn't my father. To back up a little bit, my mother left her first husband when I was only months old. I lived with her parents for a few years, and she met another man who was nothing like her first husband, and he was not very accepting of me. And then after he had his own children with her, I was completely shunned from any kind of experience of, you know, their fun and their time together. Yeah. I was on the outside of that. So I think that may have been the springboard to fall into depression. Which I later dealt with, you know, drugs, primarily drugs. But I didn't know it was depression then. You don't, you know, as you're growing up as a child, you don't realize that, you know, you're depressed. I can't speak for everyone, but for myself, I didn't realize I was actually depressed until I was in my late 40s and I was having suicidal thoughts. And I was in a place in my life where I was, you know, marginally successful compared to a lot of people. I had a full military career that I was retiring from. I had a lot going for me. I was towards the end of my military career, I was a professional in professional development and leadership development. And I had a connection with these people. And I found myself, as I'm telling stories and going through things and getting my students involved in what I was talking about, I was breaking down. And actually, you know, talking through tears as I was trying to explain certain things about the way that we lead people and how we connect with people. And that's really when I started to realize that I may have depression. It was when I couldn't finish a conversation without falling into tears. But yeah, I mean, so what is it for everyone? For me, the feeling of depression isn't so much not being able to get out of bed because I can. And it's not so much not being able to do things because I can. It's just the struggle involved in getting those things done. And that's really, for me, that's how it has festered in a matter that that I just have a hard time forcing myself to do things, even though I do them. And I'm very successful in getting things done. I have a great job now that I've retired from the Navy. I'm a professional development expert with a state agency where I live. I'm responsible for, you know, making sure that the almost 1,000 people that work there are professionally growing. And I found myself in this place in spite of everything that I've done to myself and been. And I think that's also something I try not to dwell on too much, because it does bring me down, that I almost rob myself of all these opportunities.
No, that's quite, it's quite an eye opener, right? So I think the things that I've taken away is not that you can't do something, it's just the struggle in doing it. Did I get that?
That's the heart of it. Yeah. It's not that I don't want to or can't, it's just that I have to really force myself to.
Yeah. That actually reminds me of a lady that I used to work with a long time. And, you know, she told me that she was depressed and she was sort of she was trying to keep it under control. And one of the things that she said that helped her was that every time someone invited her to go somewhere or to do something, it doesn't matter who the person is, where it is, that even though it takes her, even though she instinctively just wants to say no, she made a conscious effort to always accept to go to somewhere whenever someone asks her to go or to meet up, to socialize.
Yeah, but you know, I don't have that issue. Like, I'm actually a very social person. I'm actually very outgoing. I'm not really within myself. It's I almost have like the whole comedian syndrome, you know, people who deal with their depression in a way that they make other people laugh.
That's
I draw energy from people around me, and that's how I that's honestly how I really deal with it, is the fact that I think most people who get into positions in life where they find themselves either entertaining other people or inspiring other people, generally those people have a lot of baggage. I'm certainly among them. And I think that's where that's why you can't really, I think that's why people have a hard time actually putting their finger on what is depression, because it manifests itself in so many different ways. And mine is just when I'm by myself is when I'm having the hard time. When I'm with other people, I draw from that energy, and I actually feel I feel part of them. You know, I feel like I have a sense of belonging. And it doesn't matter who that group is. It doesn't matter where that group's located. I just feel I have this connection to people, because I think everyone's been hurt. And everyone has dealt with some kind of pain. And I think when you realize that on a level that your pain is only what you experience, it's not to a greater or lesser degree of what anyone else experiences. It's your pain.
Yeah.
No one else a level or a number on that. And I think that when we reach out and realize there's this connection, regardless of what our story is, I just have to put my story in a book. But other people have, you know, to a greater degree, much worse stories than I do. There's still a connection, because we still have that same shared sense of emotional damage. So I feel so weird talking about this really heavy topic with someone who writes children's books.
Well, the podcast is different to my children's books, right? You know, so I think because I wear so many hats, like, you know, so sometimes, you know, it's like you have to then just sort of be able to think, you know, because one minute I'm a mother, one minute I'm a children's author, one minute I'm a freelance writer, one minute I'm not just a freelance writer, I'm a medical writer, one minute I'm a podcaster. Like, I literally have so many hats on. And, you know, that's why sometimes I have people ask me, like, how do you do all these different things? But I'm like, you know what, I've got to put food on the table for my child, right? So I need to have excellent time management skills, right? So I tend to do so. Please don't, well, I wear so many different hats. And I think one of the reasons why I enjoy, and I've been running this Virtue Cafe for 3 years and running now, is because I think, or I feel that it gives people the opportunity to share a message out there that could be or would be useful to someone listening to it. Because so if not anything, even if I'm the only one who listens to you talk today, at least I've taken something away from it, which I think is a positive, right?
I would hope so.
It's a positive, because I've learned something new, you know, or it sort of helped enhance my understanding of depression. I've learned about your book, and I'm hoping that anybody who listens to the show can also take something that they can relate to. So yes, I've got the hats as, you know, a children's author, but whilst you're talking to me right now, I am not a children's author. I'm Shegulala Salami, host and producer of the Shegulala Salami Show. And then another time, I'm something else.
Sure. But the most important thing is that you and I are both humans.
Yes.
And that's really why I know I joked, you know, a little while ago, but in all seriousness, we still have that connection, regardless of what it is that we do with our daily lives. And I really appreciate your time today. But I also want to say that this book really has nothing to do with religion. I am not Jewish, I don't think. I could be. The title for the book really came from an attempt from my stepfather to publicly humiliate me. And he would write. So long story short, my stepfather had one friend. This is in the book, by the way. But my stepfather had one friend, literally only one friend. The guy wasn't a very nice guy. And his friend's father misunderstood my real first name. And it became a joke that it was suddenly Jew boy. And so in an attempt to humiliate me, my stepdad would write Jew boy on every lunch bag that I would carry to school every day, which is why the cover of the book is a lunch bag with Jew boy written on it. It was just, he was constantly in an attempt to absolutely humiliate me. He was very racist. He was very aggressive. I had a deep rage toward this man for many, many years. It took me a very long time to forgive him.
Yeah.
But that's really the whole key of this, is to understand that it's so important to forgive people who have wronged you, because you can't let go until you're able to do that.
And yeah.
There's so many people who, you know, and I'm not telling anything, I don't think anything earth shattering or new to anyone, but it's worth repeating enough times that people, you know, hopefully will finally understand that without that sense of forgiveness, you really cannot move on.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, and it's unfortunate. I mean, that you have to be in a position to either, you know, accept the apology you will never get, or, you know, just realize that you have to forgive.
Yeah.
No,
of course.
No sense of having that rage. Yeah. I just want to make sure that the book's clear, and that the story itself is not about anything more than truly someone's survival from a very painful, rough upbringing. I tried treating with drugs. I tried treating with alcohol. I almost tried treating with suicide. And throughout all of that, what I learned most is that when you reach those points in your life where you have an opportunity to ask for help, is to not walk away from that feeling and to actually reach out and ask for that assistance. Each time that I've fallen to that point, I'm the one who sought the help.
Yeah.
No one had to ask for it for me. So I had to, I signed myself into a suicide intervention program. I'm the one who sought mental health treatment 2 years ago when I started having suicidal ideology. And it really takes a strong sense of survival to want to do that. But what I hope that people get from the book too, is that strong sense of survival is in all of us. It's just a matter of us wanting to utilize it in a way that's going to benefit us later on, to take those chances. And those chances for me paid off very well. But again, I'm still struggling. I'm still on medication and I'm still receiving treatment. But at the same time, you know, really that's what helped write this book. This book was very cathartic, mm-hmm. You know, to finally get it out of my head after all these years and put it on paper, even if no one reads it. And right now it has 0 stars and no reviews.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But you know, it only went on sale March 29th. So, you know, I guess, whatever. But anyway, even if the book never sells, it's out of my head.
Yeah.
And that's such a strong sense. And each day I wake up and it's like, should I do a follow-up and write another one about what it's like to write a book and have no one read it?
Well, let's try to make sure that nothing like that happens, right? Let's try to get...
Yeah, but I appreciate you finding me on Reddit. I found you on Reddit.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's where I found to contact you.
Fabulous. It's nice. Because I put stuff there and it's like, sometimes it's really hard for me to keep track of what is working and what is not working. So yay to Reddit. So,
I found you on, I wrote a book, I think is what the subreddit is. I think that's where I found you. It was either that or authors. I don't remember. But either way, I found your name and I saw what you do. And I was very interested in being on your show. Because if nothing else, even if people don't read the book, at least I had an opportunity to also talk live with someone who can maybe help someone else understand there's life on the other side of depression.
Yes, yes, yes. Okay, so yeah, I'm going to do 2 things, right? So, and I have baby brain, like seriously, right? Like I start talking and then I go, what was I saying again, right? Anyways, okay, so first thing, if you're listening to this show, can you please, right, and this is me begging you, go and check out Mountain Bear. Did I get that correct?
Baby Mountain Flower Bear.
Yeah, I have to open the chat because I need to. I can't even see your name. Where is it? It's Baby Mountain Flower Bear, right?
Yes.
Right, yes. Baby Mountain. So go, is your book widely available?
Yeah, it's on Amazon. It's on, I think it's on Goodreads. I know it's on Kindle.
Okay.
I don't know where else it is. I know you can find it on Amazon. If you just do a search for Jew Boy, it's the one with the blue cover and it has a lunch bag on the front with Jew Boy on the lunch bag.
Right. Okay.
Know that that's not it's not a funny book. It's actually, hopefully I included some humor in there too. I did tell some funny stories. So hopefully those are worthwhile too. I think it's important to also have a sense of humor.
Okay, cool. So what was the title of the book again? Just remind me.
Oh my goodness, I had to find it. All right, give me 1 second. I'm going to look it up here. So again, my publisher created the title and the book. And here we go. So it's actually called Jew Boy, How I Overcame Beatings, Porn, Drugs, Alcohol, Suicide in High School to Retire from the U.S. Navy. A memoir of survival by Baby Mountain Flower Bear.
Okay. But go on Amazon, go on Goodreads, and type in Baby Mountain Flower Bear, because I'm not even going to remember the title of that book. That's just too long.
Right? Yeah, again, I didn't come up with the title. And I also don't feel that anyone ever actually overcomes anything again. I think that what we do is we learn how to deal with it, and hopefully we learn how to actually communicate it so that it doesn't fester. Yeah. That's important. So
okay.
go find my book.
So first things first, please go on Amazon, go on Goodreads, wherever it is that you would normally buy a book from, go there and type in Baby Mountain Flower Bear, because I'm not even going to try and tell you the name, because even the author doesn't know the name of his book, right? So we're just going to know that, and just look for something with a blue cover, right? And
a lunch bag with Jew Boy on it. Just do
yes, lunch bag with Jew Boy on it, please, okay? Because he's got no reviews yet. You know, we want to sort of try and change that, you know, because it's taken him a lot to write this book down. So, you know, I think we can see if we can try and help him, you know, get someone to tell him, give honest feedback about what, you know, they think about the book. Or Mount Baby Mountain, if someone contacted you and said they would like a free copy of your book in exchange for a review, would you do that?
Of course I would, yes.
Okay. So how can people contact you?
So my Gmail address is babymountainflowerbear@gmail.com. Again, that's babymountainflowerbear@gmail.com.
All one word.
Yes. And my Reddit account is babymfbear. So that's my username on Reddit.
Okay. Fabius, are you on Twitter? Are you on Facebook?
I am I'm on Twitter, and that again is Baby Mountain Flower Bear. And I'm not on Facebook with this name because I chose a pen name because I didn't include anyone's real names in the book because all these people are still alive with the exception of my grandparents and possibly my biological father. Everyone else is still alive.
You can create a Facebook page, right? So, because I can tag pages, but I can't tag profiles. So I always ask people to have a Facebook page. So go create a Facebook page.
I will do that.
Baby Mountain Flower Bear. So hopefully by the time you're listening to this, he's created a Facebook page. So if you need to contact him, you can do it on there. Okay.
That's
the first thing. Yeah. Go and, you know, help support this, you know, young man in getting his book and getting some reviews. Okay. Then that's the first thing. So the second thing that I'm going to say, because when you were saying this thing, you know, it then brings up some memories of conversations that I've had with people, you know, over the course of time. You know, I'm in my mid-30s now, and when I was in my 20s, I don't want to say that I was clueless, but there were a lot of things about life that I didn't understand, right? So I remember maybe 10 years ago, give or take, I asked a doctor a question, and I think the question I asked this doctor is probably a question a lot of people have asked or they've thought about, right? Like in London, we get a lot of people, and this is really bad, maybe not only in London, but you know, in the UK, we have people who they commit suicide by jumping on the train tracks, right? Just before the train approaches, right? And Londoners can be very brutal, right? We go, oh my God, how selfish can this person be, right? Like, why didn't you just kill yourself at home? Why do you have to make life difficult for all the other commuters who've got to get home, get and feed their children, you know, do things? And nurseries in the UK, right, you know, if you're late, they charge you £1 a minute. Well, at least in London, I don't know about outside of London, right? Mm-hmm. So you can imagine a parent is trying to get home to go and pick up their child from nursery, but then there are no trains to get home because someone's killed themselves, right? And
yeah.
So a lot of Londoners, I think I say Londoners because I'm a Londoner, right? So I'm not speaking for every Londoner, but, you know, I know that I've had a few people say, you know, why would this person be so selfish to disrupt everyone else's life, right? So this then brings me back to my conversation. I met a doctor once, and so I asked this, it was a lady doctor, and I said, why do people, let me try to see how I asked the question. So I said, people want to die, right? They want to kill themselves. They're tired of life, right? So why do you have to help them to keep living even when they're trying to end it, right? So that was my question. And it was a genuine question. I wasn't being cheeky or anything. I literally just wanted to know, because I think sometimes people are afraid to ask questions because people get brutal responses in return rather than an actual educational reply, right? And this doctor, wherever she may be, God bless her, because she gave me an answer that I felt changed my thinking process, right? And I felt that her answer made me to have a little bit more empathy. So the reply she gave to me was that when people are doing that, it means that they're seeking help. It's a cry for help, that they've probably reached that point where they think that they can't deal with it anymore, that there isn't anybody to support them or whatever it is, right? It's just a cry for help and they're looking for support. And so when people reach that point and, you know, they're coming into hospital, that's when obviously it just means that the people who are closest to them have not been able to spot that this person is trying to cry out for help. And so they then, you know, try and put things in place to make that person know at least that they're not alone. So I thought that that was a really powerful message. And obviously I was in my early 20s at the time. And I think it helped me to have a bit more empathy. So when I see people going through stuff now, I would be able to say, you know what, right? If you need to talk to someone, I'm always there. And then a few years ago, I had a friend, you know, who we were having a conversation. And then he said to me, oh, but I told you that I was suicidal, right? And I felt really bad because we probably did have that conversation, but I probably wasn't listening to him.
Yeah.
Right? And I imagine that if I was not listening to him, other people were not listening. So I'm just trying to say that sometimes people would start to reach out, and I can imagine that if, thankfully, you know, he didn't go that far, but it would, you know, but, you know, I've also been guilty because that's one of the things that a doctor said, right? That sometimes they're trying to reach out and talk to the people that are closest to them, but we don't really see the signs. So yeah, so we all get caught up, you know, and I do know someone who has actually jumped into a river and who was slashed his wrist and who was done, you know, so many things. So, you know, one of the things that I try to do, no matter how busy I am, no matter how crazy life seems, and my life is not perfect by, you know, by any short at all. I think my life is really crazy, right? But I try to be, say, you know, if somebody needs to listen, I'm there to listen to that person. You know, if you need to call me, just sort of say, you know, I need to talk to you right now, and just sort of be a bit more forceful so that I can listen, because, hey, I've got a 4-year-old child. Life is crazy, right? So I try to do that. So if you're going to take anything away from listening to me and Mountain Bear, just sort of hopefully you may want to, if you don't already do this, just know that sometimes people are talking to you and we get caught up in our own lives and we don't see the signs. So if you know anyone, or just send a message to all your friends and say, how are you doing? How are you really doing, right? Don't just give, there's the scripted answer of, oh yes, I'm fine. And I know I give the scripted answers as well, right? And I'm like, yeah, we're fine, you know, we're good. Just go and say, you know, yes, I know, but what's going on? And just giving people that opportunity to tell you what's going on, or make yourself open that people can ask you for help if they need it. That's just the anesthetic second thing I was going to say.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. It's sometimes it's a little more subtle, in that my asking for help in the past didn't manifest itself in any kind of a verbal cue really, if I was to, and I hate to say it like this, but if I were to kill myself, I don't think anyone would have ever guessed that was going to happen. There are friends who've read my book who had no idea that this was my life, that I've known for years, decades, who just didn't realize that this was the private life that I held behind. And I think, that if people don't ask, some people won't talk. Some people will definitely let you know. People on Facebook all the time, like, I can't deal with this anymore. You know, you see these posts and hopefully people are reaching out to these people. But other people don't do that. Like, I never talk about when something's wrong.
Yeah.
And that's, well, I'm getting past that now, because I've come so close to not being here, that I've found that it's, you know, I have a sense of survival, fortunately. But some people don't, they just don't have that. And I think if they do have that and they're unwilling to talk about it, I mean, I hate bringing up Robin Williams as an example, but I don't think anyone in a, you know, anyone who was a fan really realized that he was going to do that. Just because
Were
he never,
referring to?
Robin Williams, the comedian, Miss Doubtfire. I mean, when you think about someone like him, no, I don't think anyone would have ever imagined he was going to do that.
Yeah.
Because he never really expressed that. And millions of people knew who he was, you know, millions and millions of people. So, I mean, it's such a weird topic to try to pick apart because there's just so many ways.
Yeah.
But you know, I'm just one small sample of so many, and hopefully people can relate. I hope.
Yeah. And then the thing you said about Facebook, it reminded me of something really, really horrific that happened. You know, so I'm not very active on Facebook, but I still have a Facebook account. So one day, you know, I'd logged in after a while and I was just going through my timeline, just reading all the random stuff that was there. And then I saw someone put a comment, you know, about, oh yes, he wants to pay someone £2,000, to watch him kill himself. Right. And it was a reply to someone else that had posted something on my timeline. Right. And so I thought, oh, like, why would someone make such an expensive joke, right? So I then go and I sent this random stranger a message, you know, and I seriously, thinking back, I felt stupid for doing that. But, you know, because again, like I said, I know people who are going through, you know, difficult times. And I know that a couple of friends, you know, have had, you know, not very good times. Anyway, so I send a message to this guy and I say, oh, hey, you know, was that a joke that you were trying to do? Because that was not really a nice joke, you know, to make. And then he goes, no, I'm really serious. I want to pay someone £2,000, you know, to watch me kill myself. And I'm like, well, I don't know what you're going through, but, you know, I can assure you, right? Maybe, again, I realized that I was way out of my depth, right? It was not my place to even have that type of conversation with anyone. And looking back, I don't think I would do that again, but I'll just tell you what happened. You know, anyway, so I was having back and forth with this, you know, guy trying to say, you know what, there's a lot of support in the UK, you know, maybe you want to go to this charity or speak to that charity because, you know, there are these, all these different, you know, charities and organizations that can actually, you know, help you out. And he had a gambling addiction. Anyway, so this stranger then starts trying to video call me on Facebook. And I'm like, I don't know you, right? Why are you trying to video call me that? You know, and I said, I'm busy, so I can't, you know, talk. And then he goes, oh no, I don't want to talk to you. I just want you to watch me kill myself, right? And I thought, what have I gotten myself into, right? So I was freaking out. I was like, okay, what am I going to do? So I then call my friend because I think, you know, my friend he's quite sensible in times of, you know, me thinking of, you know, I was feeling quite stupid. Like I didn't know what to do. So I call my friend. So he then goes, right, you know what you need to do? Hang up the phone right now and call the police. Right. So that was what I did. Right. And so they were then talking through. So I called, I tried to do the non-emergency line. There was like, leave a message or something. So I then called the emergency line and then they said, oh, that's very, you know, not usual. And then, so they took the details down. And then I think in the UK, there's something where even if you don't give like emergency services your address, they actually have your address when you make a call. Anyway, so they told me to use that on Facebook. There's a feature to notify Facebook of someone who is trying to kill themselves or who have made such a comment. I didn't know this before, right? So thumbs up to Facebook for having this feature. Whether they did something about it, I don't know. But I know that I did, you know, after having this conversation with the police, I then used that Facebook feature to notify Facebook that, hey, you know, there's this person who's trying to kill himself. So if you ever see a comment by someone who is trying to do this, there is actually a feature on Facebook. And I think it's part of the report comment or report person or whatever. And it gives you the different options that you can use. And, you know, you know, I reported it. And then the next day, for the first time in my life, the police were at my door and they were like, oh, we're looking for this person. I'm like, no, the person doesn't live here, right? And so we came and then I had to tell them all over again what happened. And then they looked through it and then go, all right, they're going to go and have to look through their database to see if he's ever reported such a situation or see if they can track down who this person is. Unfortunately, I didn't get any feedback. But yeah, that was something really scary that happened to me, right? So now I know better and I would never engage because I don't think I'm skilled enough to do that, but I would, you know, report it to the appropriate authorities if I ever did see something. But you know, we're digressing and going into really, really deep stuff. But again, I guess that's the beauty of the show, because obviously it's like, you know, it's the kind of conversation I imagine you would have with a friend if you were in a cafe, wouldn't it?
Yeah, of course. Yes, we would. We would be having this conversation. This has actually been a really great conversation to have.
Yes.
I didn't know about that feature on Facebook, so I'm glad you pointed that out. That's really important. One more thing I would like to add about my book is that if I do end up selling this book, my intent is to donate a large portion of the proceeds to a specific nonprofit. It's called Valkyrie's Haven.
Okay.
It's a nonprofit for battered and homeless U.S. military female veterans. I think that's it's a noble cause, and a friend of mine's actually starting this as a new startup.
Okay.
So that's really my ultimate goal, if it does sell. So.
Okay. We'll see. Let's see, right? Can the listeners of the Shekilola Salami Show help, you know, Baby Mountain Flower Bear, right?
That would be awesome.
Yes.
Yes.
And then you can get, you know, because the thing is, one of the things about books is that, you know, I think coming on the show has been quite good because a lot of the things that we've talked about today, you could not put them enough on pen and paper in the synopsis or any of those things to really tell people the story behind the book. And that's one of the things why I like guests coming on, because then we can sort of get behind the scenes, you know, about the book. And, you know, it's what, when I'm hoping when anyone listens to this, they might think, oh, you know what, that's really quite interesting. I will go and, you know, give the book a try, and then, you know, sort of see what they think about the book.
That would be great.
Yes. Okay.
That'd be really happy. I wouldn't be depressed that day.
Fingers crossed, right? Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see what we can do, right? I'm making new promises, but I will tell everybody I know about your book, so that's for sure. Okay, so we're coming to that time of day where I have to actually kick you out of the cafe. As enjoyable as chatting with you has been, and I have to kick everyone out of the cafe. It's not just you, right?
No, I understand. This has been a great opportunity and a wonderful conversation, and I thank you so much for your time.
No, thank you. Okay, let me see now. What 5 words of wisdom can you share with listeners of the show? Just for some, you know, I like to, like I say, I get baby brain, right? So sometimes I like people to summarize things for me so that I can remember it. And we know that we're not going to remember the name of your book anyway. So,
yeah.
So
5 words. 5 words. You ready?
5 words or 5 sentences or just 5 bullet
points. Okay. Because I actually came up with a 5-word sentence. And that 5-word sentence was never be afraid to talk.
That's a good one.
That's really the root of my book, is not being afraid to talk.
Yeah.
And I think if I was to put that in 5 sentences for people to walk away with, when you are in pain and fearful for your own life at your own hands, don't be afraid to talk. When you are dealing with emotions that you don't understand or can't explain, don't be afraid to talk. You know, there's all these opportunities for us to actually let people know what's going on with us. And if we're not doing that, then we're only living in our own pain. And there's no sense to do that unless that's what makes you comfortable. And if that's where you're comfortable at, then it's probably time for you to talk.
Yeah.
So that's really the whole takeaway.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Now, so this is really personal. I'm still trying to think whether I should say it or not.
Hmm. Okay.
I'm thinking, right? Okay, so you remember like how you said at the beginning, right, that after your stepdad had his own children,
yeah,
you know, he kind of like just shunned you and didn't really send you, that sort of thing.
Yeah. I thought he was my dad. I met him when I was so young. He came into my life when I was very, very young.
Yeah.
And I was less than three, I think. Mm. I only ever knew him as dad. That's what I called him. But when I came home one day, and this is also in the book, when I came home one day and found a bank statement, a bank book with my first name and my middle name and a different last name, was when I questioned my mother. And I was very, very young at this time too, six or seven, maybe at the oldest. And she called him at work and was explaining to him that I had found the book and that she was probably going to explain to him that I wasn't his. And I don't know if I can curse on your show or not.
No, please don't.
All right. So, but anyway, she slammed the phone down and called him a horrible name and said, he's not your father. So that's how I found out. And that's how we both found out that I knew. And since that time, he became very resentful of me. And I talk about this story in very harsh language. It's very graphic. But that was really the turning point from when I realized that I was not going to be treated very well. And I wasn't.
So, up until that point, had he treated you well, though?
No, he didn't. He didn't treat me very, very good. I know he had struck me at least one time that he would brag about. But after I found out that he wasn't my dad, and after he realized that I knew, it became very, very painful.
Yeah.
That's where the nicknames came in. And that's where the bullying came in. And that's where the abuse came in. And it lasted for my entire young life until I finally left home for the final time. I'd run away a few times, but each time I'd run away, I failed. I found myself back at that house, and it was absolutely horrible. Each time, it only got worse. So when I finally realized, when I finally got the courage to go join the military, which is something that he was trying to drive me to do my entire life, and I was very I outright refused to because I didn't want to turn into him. Mm. But I finally did because I didn't feel I had any other choices.
Yeah.
Okay. And it turned out to be the best decision I ever made. It got me away from that environment. It gave me a whole new a level of self-respect. It gave me a future that I didn't think I was going to have. And here I am today with a really great life. And only because I decided to run away and my siblings are all a mess. I was the only one to survive and he became so violent later on that he actually turned on his own children.
Oh dear.
It was bad. It's a mess. My sister, she's an alcoholic drug addict who still reaches out to random friends of mine on Facebook asking for money. She's on state, support, her boyfriend almost murdered her along with two other women. She was the only survivor of a almost triple homicide over a dog, of all things.
Oh,
I realized he was actually stabbing his girlfriend until she was almost dead. Yeah, I mean that's the life that I left.
Yeah,
was chaos. Which is good.
One of the reasons why I was sort of coming back to it, right? Because I know so
right. It's just me and my daughter, right? So I've just, you know, I'm not married. I've not got a partner or anything, right? Mm-hmm. And I know that sometimes when it's just me by myself with my thoughts alone, I always imagine, right, that if I was ever going to think about dating, what would it be like, right? And I can imagine a lot of single parents, a lot of single mothers, you know, probably one might be listening to the show and thinking, oh my God, this is this guy talking about her greatest fear, right? Because in my mind, what you said actually has played out in my head a gazillion times. And then sometimes I always ask myself that, you know, is it even worth it? Might as well just grow up and just be a old hag, you know, grow up to be an old hag for the rest of my life, right? Than put my daughter, you know, in a potentially difficult situation.
Right? Yeah. So I have two stepchildren today.
Yeah.
I'm going to try not to cry, but,
oh dear, sorry.
They've been in my life for almost, going on 10 years. And I never wanted to have children of my own because I didn't want to, I didn't want to be him.
Yeah.
But what I've discovered is that, the right combination, you can introduce a child to someone who might not be their father. But as long as there's a connection, and and you'll understand and you'll know that when that man enters your life, I would say not just to, you know, and obviously you haven't, but I would say not to jump into any relationship right away and to really get to know the person. My wife and I did jump in. I was married previously. I'm divorced. And I didn't want to have children with her at all. I never wanted to have children at all, period. I was scared. But then I met my wife and her two kids, who were 11 and almost 13 at the time. And they've grown in my life and I'm everything I never thought I would be with them. I don't have all the answers, and I can't tell you that everyone's going to be accepting of a child that's not theirs, but there are people out there who will.
Yeah, that's what I was just literally going to say, right? That I know, like, you know, that's why I just wanted to bring us, this is more for the listeners, to just sort of bring back that as a single parent, you know, what you said, you know, sort of, it sort of lived out one of my greatest fears as a parent. And I imagine that if there were any single parents listening to this, it probably would have played out also their greatest fears, you know, as a parent, right? But then I know that I once connected online with another blogger who was a single parent, and she met her husband, who, from the things she wrote, you know, about him, has been really amazing, you know, towards her son. And, you know, when she talks about both of them, you would not even imagine that he's not her son's biological father. So I was just trying to say, just like, you know, I've sort of addressed, you know, so from your point of view, I was then trying to address it from the single mother's point of view. So if you do know a single mother, right, even if she's not said this, this is something that has probably crossed her mind at one point or the other. And, you know, I just wanted to say that there are people out there, even though I haven't met one yet, but I am optimistic, and I know people who have done it, you know, who would also love your child, because there are lots of human beings who are capable of love, and hopefully we would all find someone who can not just love you, but also love your child and treat them as theirs as well. And, you know, be everything good that you can imagine.
Yeah. Just don't forget to take chances on people who've had wounds in the past. I know a lot of people shove those people aside, being like, that person has a lot of baggage, or that person has a lot of damage. But some of us out there that do have a lot of baggage and damage are that way because we haven't been given the opportunity to demonstrate who we really are.
Yes.
And I think that's important. And I'm so grateful to have been given that chance.
Yeah. I'm really pleased for you too. And I'm sorry to that, because I could hear us though. I am really sorry if I've made you cry. Sorry.
Oh, you it's not because I'm sad. It's actually because I'm really happy. So, life really did turn out well for me, and I thank you for the opportunity to talk about it.
No, thank you so much for coming on the show.
It's been a wonderful person, and I think you're going to find the right person for you.
Yes, right now I just think to myself, I need to make money, right? Right now.
Yeah. Yep. And maybe my podcast will help you.
Right now, I'm just looking for money, right? I think once I have money, then the other things can fall in place, right? I think the worst is not have money and be dependent on someone else.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So, this was wonderful. Thank you very much. I hope people actually listen to this.
Yes, hopefully, right? Anyways, it's come to that time where I literally have to run and go and pick up my little human from nursery, right?
Okay.
Tell me of my little child has a gob, right? I don't know who she takes after, wink wink. And she'll go, Mommy, you're late. So yes, let me not go and deal with that right now.
Yeah.
Okay,
that's fantastic.
It's been an absolute pleasure chatting with you, Baby Mountain Flower Bear. And until next time, everyone, I hope you've enjoyed listening to this episode. And it is the Shegilola Salami Show. If you know anyone who's been touched by anything, please do just remind them and tell them that there's someone out there, you know, who you, and I'm referring to you, that you love them and you're there for them and you're happy and willing to listen to them, even if they call you at 3 a.m. in the morning trying to have a conversation with you. Well, until next time, it is the Shegilola Salami Show. Bye now.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.